Welcome to the Mobile Game Dev Playbook. This podcast is brought to you in association with Game Refinery. Join us as we uncover the latest trends in mobile game design.
Hello and welcome to the Mobile Game Dev Playbook. Thanks for tuning in for another episode. This is a podcast all about what makes a great mobile game, what is and isn't working for mobile game designers, and all the latest trends. I'm your host, John Jordan, and in today's episode, we are going to be looking back at 2021. So I hope it was a good year for you. It's been a great year for mobile games, and we're going to delve into some of the big trends, some of the big games with our two experts today. So welcome, the experts. How's it going? So I think first time on the podcast, I think, Timu. Is that right?
I think I've been once, but...
Have you? Okay.
But yeah, it's been a long time.
A long time ago then, yes.
Really excited to be here.
Good to have you back. So you are a games analyst at Game Refinery, and we have Wilhelm Voltelainen, been on the show lots of times, so...
Yes.
No surprises there. Senior games analyst at Game Refinery. How's it going, Wilhelm?
Going really, really fine, as always. Thanks for asking.
Good. Been a good year. So we're gonna kick off... We're going to go sort of around the world. I think we're going to start with the US and look at some of the trends there. So what have we been seeing in that North American market?
Yeah, of course. Like it's been an interesting year. Often years before, like we usually had this huge trend, for example, battle passes before. But I think this year we have, well, there's not been as big trend as battle pass in the last year, but like lots of these maybe smaller trends there. So I think first really interesting one is the sort of what we have been seeing this year especially in the casual games, is this event, new kind of events there. One, I think, really interesting point is the renovation game modes. So of course, in the past years, we have games like Homescapes and Gardenscapes really sort of innovating with their renovation meta gameplay. So that's of course been like a huge thing, huge successful point for them. But now actually these other casual games without this kind of renovation style meta has actually been started to utilize these kind of elements in their events. Some really good examples is, for example, Phase 10 Top Crossing 100, I think, Top Crossing 100 game, card game. It had just last Halloween, it actually had this sort of Halloween theme park where players would play the core gameplay, collect these material items, and then they could construct and renovate their Halloween themed park. Very similarly that you're doing in renovating in Homescapes, for example. And we have had actually a lots of these kind of similar games or similar events past year. So for example, Clockmaker has had these Best Friends, Solitaire Cruise, Three Peaks card game. And actually this has been appeared a lot in casino games as well. For example, Caesar slots and huge casino slots nowadays running these kind of renovation events a lot in their recurring events. And of course, this has never been seen before in casino games especially.
Yeah, that's really interesting, isn't it? So you're basically, you're sort of taking that hybridization sort of metric thing that has been going on in game design and just sort of packaging it up so it says, not even sort of a mini game, it's like a mini event, isn't it? So you're sort of...
Yeah, exactly.
Really, really sort of building events become more than just here's a funny hat you can buy.
Yeah.
For this week, yeah.
And of course, talking about those mini games, those has actually been trending as well. So first, of course, talking about casual games, these sort of course, hybridization has been big thing before as well, but we have seen these sort of games, of course, as always, Playrix utilizing these different mechanics pretty much before others as always. So Playrix, for example, in Fishdom, in Township and Gardenscapes, they'll be utilizing these special game modes, which has been sort of the core gameplay has been totally different from the match three core gameplay. So for example, in Township, there's constantly running these nowadays, these mini games, which are using this sort of hyper casual styled core gameplay. For example, if you are aware of the hyper casual game Helix Jump, for example, well, the Township has had the event where it's the core gameplay is super similar to that. So that's really interesting, I think. And also, of course, this trend has also been appearing in mid-core as well. For example, these top crossing shooter games like Garena Free Fire, they are also utilizing this sort of different kind of core gameplay in their events. So they've had event game modes which use the similar core gameplay to, for example, to Among Us and Fall Guys. And in the Garena Free Fire, well, you have this meta where you collect characters, but also pets. But in those special modes, you're actually playing with your pets, so it's sort of incentivizing collecting those pets as well. And I think doing this through those events is really good way to sort of hop onto those trends, like you, of course, Among Us and Fall Guys and hyper casual games. They have been like these really super successful trends, and you can basically bring this kind of really trendy gameplay to your game, which is totally different, by just, you know, doing this true event. So I think those are like cool and interesting trends of this year, for sure.
Sort of layer upon layer, isn't it? It's sort of interesting. I mean, I guess it's interesting that as you say, sort of kind of Playrix, which sort of were the pioneers of sort of doing that on a core level in terms of the basic gameplay, and now proving, you know, that they're not just, they didn't just invent a genre, they're, you know, they're very adapted at sort of leveraging in that sort of, those sort of, because really it's just a sort of an extra retention, engagement, monetization sort of layer on top of the main game. I mean, dare I say, these are sort of these games are almost platforms now, or maybe metaverses, but maybe shouldn't mention that word, but you can sort of see, you know, when you get to a certain scale, can't you, that you just have so many people in your game every day, and it's just a question of, you know, what do they want to do. It doesn't need to be just what was the core game experience. Maybe these things have lots of games within them, as they're so solid. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah, I think also, of course, like one other trend, or actually maybe not a trend, but like more interesting games of course has been released this year as well, and there's been like quite interesting different kind of trends. As I think one really cool sort of success story of this year has been this Cookie Run Kingdom. I think Teemu is sort of super expert of that game, so maybe you can explain it a bit better.
Yeah, I've been really enjoying that game. It launched, Cookie Run Kingdom launched somewhere in January, and I personally really loved the art style and hopped in at that point. And for a long time, it was in like top crossing 200 or so. So kind of on and off the top 200. But then suddenly in September, everyone was starting to talk about it because it rose to the top 10 and managed to stay there. It established a new baseline there and has been in about top 10 since then. And what made it rise there was, well, they started doing a kind of marketing campaign. They added these English voice actors. And they made a lot of content with those. There were lots of different types of giveaways. They were the voice actors were their recording sessions were shown as a video, and they were interviewed, and they were reviewing fan arts, and so they really had the voice actors in very deep with their marketing. But then they also had the miraculous X Factor, and the game kind of went viral also in TikTok, and a lot of the especially younger users really started talking about the game because of that. And it's just a wonderful game. It's approachable to so many kinds of players. Me being kind of a more mid-core player, I really like the mechanics there and the character collecting and stuff like that. Whereas my wife, who also plays the game, was more into the kind of visual appeal and the storyline. So it really works for all kinds of players.
And I guess, you know, it's interesting because, you know, Dev Sisters, the South Korean developer, you know, they have been around a long time. And I remember when the original Cookie Run came out, and that was like a massive hit, viral hit in South Korea, partly because it was on the Kakao platform, like 2013 or something, I can't remember. I mean, that was like a massive big game. And then it sort of, they did sequels and stuff, and it sort of sort of went away a little bit, certainly in the West. So it's interesting that they've, you know, had all that sort of deep IP and that, as you say, that sort of great art style. Now they're sort of going back to what you were saying, actually, Wilhelm. It's almost, you know, they're building like a, you know, it's like a platform. It's, you know, it's a kingdoms thing. So there's lots of different things in there. And again, it's, you know, as you were saying, sort of, Timo, that people can approach those things in different ways. Maybe if you don't like the PvP, you don't play the PvP bit so much. Maybe you do the trading on, you know. So it's kind of quite interesting how sort of games are becoming much more sort of, just individual games are going much more diverse in how they sort of can be played. It's not, this is how you must play this game, you know. So
yeah absolutely. Of course, a couple more sort of interesting new kind of games. So I think one super cool success story has been Chain Match, actually, which is again a casual game, but it sort of has been able to bring this new kind of mix. Again, talking about this hybridization, so it's basically core gameplay of the game is this match 3 / Mahjong style gameplay. I have personally never seen that kind of gameplay in other games. And there's also meta elements, basically similar to the renovation game Redecor. So you have these construction renovation elements, but they are like really different from what you have, for example, in Gardenscapes. You're actually in Gen Match, you're decorating these rooms and so on. It's sort of, the whole game has this sort of really chill and relaxing vibe, say. And it's really interesting the charts looking like, because it has been climbing steadily in the crossing, and now it's like already in top 100 crossing. And the whole, like, the gameplay and everything, it's just super simple. So I guess there's still space to innovate even in the puzzle genre there. And of course, Talgin.
Yeah,
go ahead.
I was going to say, it doesn't look like the sort of game that, you know, would either could have a lot of monetization in there, or would sort of attract an audience that would spend a lot. I mean, as you say, it just looks like a very simple sort of tile-based.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, of course, it's, you know, nicely put together, but it doesn't strike you as yeah, we're going to make like lots of money from this.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, I think the monetization is mostly centered around like the core gameplay, you know, boosters and so on. But it apparently it's just something that really, really works. And of course, talking about match 3, of course, we had Royal Match also from the Dream game, super like success story in right now in Top Crossing 10. And of course, that game being from the XP Games people, so yeah, that's really interesting game as well. And of course, that as well, sort of utilizing this super simple renovation meta, so seems to be the trend still.
Mm-hmm. No, I think it's always interesting when you see sort of you know, teams repeating their success, and obviously, you know, the peak people sold out to Lot for Zynga, and now they've, yeah, potentially those are games they would have made at Zynga peak if they'd stayed there. But sort of, yeah, they take those learnings and they take them on to the next stage. And I guess what was interesting for me, who doesn't follow it as sort of close as you guys, is you kind of, at some stage, you kind of think there can be no more innovation in match 3. You know, everyone must have done everything. and then something like Royal Match comes along, and clearly, you know, if you're really into sort of match 3 games, it really stands out, and you know.
Yeah.
So it's always good to have your your cynicism about no one can improve on this sort of game mechanic, sort of proven wrong by clever game designers who clearly know what they're doing.
Talking about more of trends, so I think we have been talking about IPs for a long time now, but I think especially this year we have sort of started to see more and more of new games appearing Top Crossing lists which have these like huge IPs. Some examples, actually two MOBAs, League of Legends Wild Rift and Pokemon Unite, both sort of both releasing this year, and well, they're both in top 200 crossing. Of course, the MOBA genre is probably one of the hardest genres to monetize when you have to sort of play around, like not being paid to win, but still, you know, being able to monetize somehow. But yeah, those are like really, really interesting. And of course, Wild Rift, really interesting case, especially lately now that Riot has been bringing more of these mobile only features to the game, such as like friend systems and guilds, actually. And I think the guild update, where they added new battle pass season and different kind of bundles, I think that actually skyrocketed the game in top crossing list. So at least in the revenue perspective. So it seems that sort of course Wild Rift had this huge explosion at the release, but after that it struggled a bit to keep in the top 200 crossing, but it seems that Riot is developing the game further, so that's nice. I think of course Final Fantasy First Soldier just got released. I think Teemu is analyzed it, so you have any thoughts on that game?
Yeah, I personally really have loved the game. Like it does so well. Like many things, it does so well. Like it innovates on the battle royale genre by bringing the PvE elements there. So you're not just hunting players, you're also hunting monsters. And it really gives purpose to the whole experience, not just like the couple of bursts when you happen to see someone and manage to take them down. The graphics are good because for most part, they are borrowed from the console game Final Fantasy VII Remake. So it gives the game really a good AAA look. The gameplay is really solid, like just like any other battle royale in game, but it works. But what it's been struggling with is the kind of gamble it had with the kind of mismatch of the brand, what the brand is known for and what the genre is known for. So far it hasn't been doing that well in Japan. It has at best been at 110s, whereas in the US it never even reached the 200 so far. So the game is having a bit of a hard time, but it's not because the game isn't good. It's that it doesn't find its audience. Like for Battle Royale fans, they're probably very invested in the Battle Royale games that they have played before, both time and money wise. And then Final Fantasy fans would prefer some more like PvE focused games, or don't want to play on mobile and kind of wait for the console PC port that has been teased by the developers to be a possibility at some point. So even though you can play it with controller, it's not like a console experience. But the skeptics at least in my bubble that have tried it have really liked it. But it just goes to show that like when you have a huge IP to use, you really need to think what it's known for and what the genre you're going for is known for, and if they kind of match.
That's a good point. I mean, I guess it's interesting that because there has been, I guess, the successful the Final Fantasy 4X game a few years ago now. I mean, it's a very that's sort of one of those ones where you wouldn't necessarily expect Final Fantasy fans to sort of. Yeah, it's sort of, you know, there's nothing in the lore of Final Fantasy where you're sort of doing 4X type strategy gaming. I mean, but that seems to have been a, you know, a fairly decent success. I guess you know, just in general, the amount of battle royale games out there, it's just, you know, it's just hard I think to find an audience, particularly when stuff like PUBG is still being, you know, there's so many big successful ones out there. It's not like, I don't think there's, you know, if you're into you know, battle royale on mobile, you know, you've got a whole bunch of games to play, and probably you're playing one of them already. So it becomes that sort of can you stop someone playing one game to play your game?
Yeah.
So yeah, it's, and I guess it's interesting as well because always with those sort of Japanese sort of RPGs, there is that, as you pointed out, there is that very strong sort of local audience who want a very specific thing. And obviously, there's not that many people in Japan. There's billions more outside Japan, but. Imagine it being a designer. It's quite a hard thing to sort of work at. To have a good game, you've got this IP. Doesn't quite fit into what you're doing. I haven't played it yet, so I can't say. But it looks fantastic. I quite like the Final Fantasy sort of 7 world. So maybe I should be trying it out. I mean, in general, what do we think about IPs? You say there's, you know, IPs around all the time. Do we think they're as important as they used to be? I sort of wonder now whether they're maybe becoming sort of slightly less so. I mean, there was this sort of failure of the Harry Potter game from Niantic this year. Not the failure, but they're shutting it down now. So I suppose we have to call it a failure.
Well, talking about Harry Potter, actually, we're talking about later about China. I think we have like super success story of Harry Potter, but of course, like It really depends. I think, my personal opinion, I think IP, like finding the right EP for your IP for your game, especially nowadays, I think that can be like a super, like you can, well, of course, if it's a mismatch, it's a mismatch. So I think Final Fantasy goes a bit to the same category as Pokemon Unite. Like Pokemon Unite has extremely good core gameplay and so on. But like maybe the Pokemon audience is not the mobile audience, similar to the maybe not the Final Fantasy audience is not your average average Battle Royale audience. But of course, compared to 4X games, then the 4X games, they don't rely that heavily on having huge player base in terms of monetization, but like these cosmetic monetized PvP games, you have to have a massive player base to be able to hit the top crossing ranks pretty much. So it's like, I think it really depends on the game.
No, it's a good point. It's not so much the IP as you say, looking at sort of the business bit behind it, the business model and what sort of KPIs you need to run those sort of games successfully. Because I guess anyone can make a game, but for these things to work, the UA component is clearly the big thing about growing the audience. Can you spend the marketing money to grow the audience, to monetize it, to sort of feedback in? So, yeah, good points there.
Yeah.
We've got anything else from the US, or should we, are we going to be moving on around the world? I think there's a bit more, is there?
Yeah, I think I can go quite quickly about the other things. So, of course, we just had the launch of PUBG New States. So, Kraftons, like the original, I think the original publisher of the PUBG PC game, they launched their own mobile version of the PUBG, which is, I have not personally played it, but I've seen it's pretty much the same, almost the same game as PUBG Mobile. I think the live ops is probably different then, but well, the game not really is peaked in top 100 crossing, but it's at least not yet as been as successful as PUBG Mobile. But really interesting to sort of compare the especially live ops of those two games and see sort of if the Krafton can find as big success as PUBG Mobile can.
There's also the Indian version that's just been released. Not that that's, we don't have a section for India, but it's sort of quite interesting now, isn't it? Even talking about the number of sort of mobile battle royale games, there's three in the same sort of from the same company effectively.
Yeah.
Depending on where you are in the world, I suppose.
Yeah. And of course, we just had, but this year we had launch of Marvel Future Evolution, which is like, you had this, you have these huge, massive production values. There's cutscenes and voice acting and so on. But it was like really, looked really promising. But it's still compared to, for example, Genshin. Well, talking about action RPGs, the action RPG genre is still dominated by Genshin. Like Marvel Future Evolution, it was not able to make as big splash or sustain after the initial huge spike in crossing, but yeah, it's still that genre. Well, it's still dominated by Genshin, so we're gonna see if other IPs or other companies can sort of.
I guess the advantage of having the Marvel one is there's always sort of new, there's always stuff going on in that universe, so there's always like a new film or something, you know, you can imagine sort of crossover event. You have your big launch, but then you have lots of times to sort of not quite relaunch, but you have, so you know, if you've launched and you didn't get a big enough audience, then that means your fan base didn't know about it, so when the next film comes out you can sort of re-promote it all and sort of try and get them back in, so you get sort of I guess a bit more latitude to try and sort of build up a bit over time rather than being a big launch, I think.
Yeah, I will not be surprised if we see the sort of Marvel Future Evolution appearing in the higher in the crossing in when they were sort of, we get new Marvel movies. So it's, well, as an IP, Marvel is probably one of the best mobile IPs there is. So, and of course, some other small findings of 2021, for casino games, it's been like huge year for them for in the collection systems. Of course, collection system has been trending in other years as well, but now especially in casino games, in top 100 crossing casino games, the collection system utilization rose from 47% to 80%. So almost every single casino game in top 100 crossing nowadays utilizes these collection album systems. Then some other trends, of course, Paddle Pass. You always have to talk about Paddle Pass, so it's actually still trending this year. So the overall utilization in the US, actually in the top 100 crossing, rose from 46% to 61%. So it just keeps rising. And lastly, of course, the social mechanics, well, like guilds, they are still trending higher. So in all of the titles, guilds kills in top 100 crossing rose from 60% to 70%, and in talking about casual titles, that's also in the casual titles the percent rose by 20%. So they are becoming more and more popular. I think players are starting to more and more expect to have those social features. And well, of course, those are not the only social features you can add. This year we have seen these more deeper social mechanics starting to trend. Of course, we have been talking about these metaverses and so on. But I think really interesting case in casual games, we have started to see this as well. So this game Cooking Diary, which is basically a casual time management cooking game, where you have your own avatar chart that you can customize and so on. Of course, the game is already fully fleshed in, you have killed mechanics and sending us can help. But just, I think last week they introduced this social hanging areas to the game. So you have three different areas where you can enter with your avatar. And I think, I personally find that super, it just fits super well to the game, because it's basically, I think in casual games, it's quite hard actually to find friends in the game, because usually you have to go to the game's Facebook page and try to seek friends there, which is not the sort of intuitive things to do, because you basically have to go outside of the game. But now in Cooking Diary, you can go in these areas and meet other people and make friends. And also this fits super well to the cosmetic monetization in Cooking Diary. So players can now show off even better their sort of cool cosmetics they have collected and bought.
Now it's interesting, obviously with the guild stuff, you know, it's got quite a long way to go still. If you're saying 20% of the top 100 casual titles have that in, I mean...
Oh, it rose by 20%, so actually...
It rose by 20%. Oh, okay, right. Okay, that makes more sense. Yeah. Oh, okay.
Most of those games have killed many mechanics.
Cool, good. So that's a good wrap-up of what's been happening in North America. I think we're going to... Should we go to Japan now? Teemu, do you want to take us through what's been happening? Some big new games launched?
Yeah, well, overall in Japan, it feels like the market stays the same. Like you have the old masters kind of sticking there. You have the Fate Grand Order. You have Monster Strike. Fate Grand Order was released in 2015. Monster Strike 2013. Puzzle and Dragons like 2012. So these are kind of older titles, but they are still like sustained crossing within like five in the top 10. So you have the kind of top spots really reserved. But then there was a big new name, Uma Musume Pretty Derby, that launched in February. And it rose to like top crossing one and stayed there for a long time. And sustained crossing rank, it's like three. So it's been really keeping up the top spots. And from a Western perspective, it's a really weird kind of game, because girls are racing horses and they are also pop idols. So they have these concerts, but they run around the like racing horse track to compete with each other. But I think it appeals. It has high production values. It has anime series and spin-off manga.
Yeah.
So it's a big thing.
It was part of an existing IP, wasn't it? I think there's been some few games in the past. I think there've been some console games, but there's been this game. People have been waiting for this game for quite a long time. I think it was in development for quite a number of years, wasn't it? So.
Yeah, it was delayed for some time, and when it launched, like people were really excited to hop in, and they've been staying there.
And it's actually, I don't know if they're Japanese games, but I know there are a whole sort of series of games where you have this sort of similar thing where these sort of anime female characters are representing other things. There's a whole thing about, I think, one with tanks and one with battleships. And the first time you hear about it, you just think, well, that's rather odd. But there is a whole sort of, you know, genre of game, of sort of RPG type games that sort of play into that thing. And often they are based around sort of existing anime sort of IP and stuff like that. So it makes some sort of sense.
Yeah, it does. Huge IP games in general are doing, I think, doing well in Japan. You have a new Dragon Quest game popping up every now and then. And then one bigger one with high production values that came out was the, well, in West known as Slime Isekai Memories. It's based on the anime. That time I got reincarnated as a slime, which as a concept sounds weird again to us, but it's doing really well, staying in the top 10s in there. And in the US, it was something like top 80s or so. So these games keep popping up. There was Ni No Kuni, Cross Worlds, MMORPG launched in June. It's doing great in top 50s or so. And so I think the anime or game IP based games are quite common in the top crossing Japan when it comes to new games.
It is interesting actually the comparison with, you know, when we're talking, Wilhelm was talking about sort of the Western IP, that those tend to be sort of quite you know, this is a big thing coming, a big new Marvel games coming. Whereas in Japan, they seem to have, I mean, they have a lot more IP anyway, because it's just, you know, anime and manga is just sort of part of the culture in a way. It certainly isn't in the UK, I think, in the US as well. But they always have these mashups as well. So you have lots of games around, you can have multiple games on the same IP, and then you have games with different IP, and they sort of have the mashup events, don't they? I imagine for you, it's very hard to sort of keep track of all these different, because all these IP characters, all these sort of RPG sort of manga things, are all sort of going into each other's games and having different events, and everyone loves it because everyone, you know, everyone has their favorite characters, and I think it works really well. But that's very different, because I guess we just don't have, you know, can't imagine. Trying to think what a good example, but you know. Yeah, Harry Potter crossover event in a Marvel game. I mean, obviously you could do that, but in Japan it just seems like with these sort of IP, they're much happy to share them all around. They don't sort of close it off and go, this is very special. You know, it's a very different approach to IP.
Yeah, definitely. Promotional collaboration events are a huge thing in Japan. We see them all the time, like the Seven Deadly Sins or Attack on Titan. Those have been on at least, like, I think at least on 8 different games. And it just works on any kinds of genre. They seem to be popping up here and there. Then one other interesting game that was kind of struggling in Japan, actually, State of Survival. It was having a tough time with its kind of regular version that it has on other markets as well. It wasn't doing that great, so they shut down that version in June. And released a new localized version of it, and it's been in top crossing 60s since then. So I think it kind of almost made 10 times more revenue per day compared to the old one. And what the version had was a slightly improved graphics and new main characters that worked better for the Japanese audience. So they localized that. They had these kind of front characters being shrine maiden and schoolgirl that are something that Japanese people are more used to seeing in their culture than, say, some muscular man fighting zombies or something like that. So it was really well localized, and my coworker actually wrote a good blog post about it. So if anyone wants to see about that in more detail, that's also a possibility.
Yeah, I think definitely super good example how to monetize the Western style game for the Japanese market.
Yeah, and then other trends that have been showing in Japan, ads have been really rare in Japan so far, but recently those have been showing up. Monster Strike added those all in late 2020. Puzzle and Dragons added those in early 2021, so this year, and then Line has also been adding those to their games, like Line Poco Poco and Disney Tsum Tsum, and so with big names, big older titles like these adding ad monetization, I wonder if smaller players are also going to be adding ad monetization to their top crossing games. Like outside top crossing, of course, you have ad monetization, but so far the top games have avoided those.
Is there any sort of fan pushback yet? Because that's often the thing that you sort of, you know, I mean, you can do it. If it's rewarded video ads, then you're sort of giving them more of the stuff they would otherwise buy. So that's probably works better, but.
Yeah, it hasn't shown really, like those games still keep their high spots in rankings, so it's interesting to see how that develops in Japan.
Do you think they're doing that because they're starting to sort of decline in terms of, sort of, you know, they say these games have been out for, you know, getting on for a decade now, So is it just about money, or is it more than that?
Well, I think they are maybe seeing it as well, we're making good money anyway, so if ads can make us even more money, why not? Because they are not kind of taking away from the main monetization, like gotchas or character collecting. It's just like improving like your inventory size or give you more stamina, something small. So
I guess it's not those sort of forced ads for the players, but more of those incentivized optional ads.
Yeah. And then just to throw some couple of small things that we've seen kind of these more erotic types of games pop up in higher ranks, some even in like top 10 or so. Really kind of explicit without showing everything, but really, really hinting with all the cream and aprons and revealing clothing. It's quite explicit. So those have been popping up on higher ranks than before this year, especially with more and more daring collaboration events.
Are those sort of, would they be seen as sort of like proper you know, games, as in they've got sort of proper gameplay behind them, or are they basically just, like you say, they're just there to sort of titillate people?
They are really, really like proper examples of their game, action RPGs or kind of idler games, I think, and turn-based RPGs. So they are really like well-made games, but they appeal to a certain kind of audience that is clearly willing to pay. And let's see what else. They really put effort in Japan on anniversaries and even half anniversaries. Those are a thing. And well, maybe as a last point from Japan, location-based games like Pokemon Go and Dragon Quest Walk, Pikmin Bloom, Ekimomo, those are performing probably better in Japan than in the West, or they are performing better, and they have more variety there. They don't need to shut them down so much as Niantic does in the West. I don't know, maybe it's because Japanese people might use more public transportation and have more walking time, whereas in the US you kind of have to take the time to go out to play the game instead of it happening kind of naturally. Maybe that affects it, but they have more variety and those games are doing well in Japan.
And there's no, I mean, Dragon Quest Walk is sort of the interesting one, isn't it? Obviously Dragon Quest, massive IP in Japan, but there's no, from what I saw, there's no chance that game's going to be released globally. It's just going to be a very sort of Japanese, you know, a deep sort of cultural resonance for Japanese gamers to play that sort of game. And I guess if you take it globally, people don't know Dragon Quest so much, so you don't get, it's not like a Pokemon thing, and then you just have all the server costs for running it around the world. So sort of interesting where, yeah, the whole thing with many location-based games is that everyone in the world are playing the same game, whereas actually what you find is if you get the right IP, you just want it in the countries that get the IP. You don't want to send it around the world.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's Japan done. Shall we head into China? You mentioned the Harry Potter. So Harry Potter games are doing well. It's not just the one in the West.
I think some really interesting release we have this year in China market. Of course, China market crowded by, you know, MMORPGs and turn-based RPGs. But like, I think this is a bit new, different kind of games are appearing in China. Of course, they have had huge big IPs behind them. So for example, Harry Potter Magic Awakened, which is apparently going to release in other markets as well, which is going to be really interesting, but it's been a mega success in China. So it's actually in top crossing 10 in China. It's basically this tactical battle game where you're sort of collecting different characters and utilizing these card mechanics and so on. But of course, it has huge amount of other features as well. But basically, there's these social hanging rooms where you can see other players. It's the story is super heavy in the game and so on. And I actually, if you're interested in going deeper, that we have Chinese analyst specialist Inka actually has brought in a really good Decoder blog post just from that game. So I definitely recommend checking that out. And of course, some other interesting games. Wild Rift, actually, that we talked about earlier in the US section, it was released as well in China. And it's basically exactly the same game in China, but it has had a lot of more success in China. It's currently in Top Crossing 3, actually. Which is quite interesting. Apparently, of course, the League of Legends IP is messing with the West, but it seems to be like even bigger in China. So that's really really interesting that it has been that successful. And of course, Battle for the Golden Spatula as well, which is funny name, but it's.
Can you repeat that for people who didn't catch that one?
Yeah, so Battle for the Golden Spatula, which is. Basically, a teamfight tactics from the Riot Games. It's been released with the teamfight tactics name in China. I mean, sorry, in the West, but it's basically the Chinese version of that game. And in the West, it has struggled a lot. I think the whole sort of this auto chess genre has been super hard for the publishers and game level developers to monetize in the West, but in the China again it's actually in Top Crossing 10, but this game compared to the Western version it's actually totally different. It's basically the feature set is much more robust and the monetization, there's more different kind of monetization mechanics and live ops and everything. So I think that game is, if you are intending to develop a auto chess game, I definitely recommend checking out the Battle for the Golden Spatula, because like it's crazy that the amount of success that it has been able to find.
You're saying it's quite interesting there that they, what you're saying. So from the same company, from Riot Games, Wild Rift has sort of been released in China, sort of the same version, mm-hmm. I'm sure some sort of changes, but nothing sort of incredible. And then Teamfight Tactics becomes Battle for the Golden Spatula, which just like makes absolutely no sense.
Yeah.
And then it's like a totally different game. I mean, probably from a totally different team it's quite interesting, isn't it?
Yeah, of course the core gameplay is the same, but I think the art style might be a little bit different, but I think it's more about like the different kind of difference in features and the monetization that makes the difference there.
I mean, yeah, it just goes. I mean, I guess China is such a big market that if you were going to do sort of a heavy duty localization, that would be sort of the first one you would choose, wouldn't it? Because it's just, if you get it right there, then it sort of pays everything back. But it's interesting again. Yeah, as mentioned, the Harry Potter Magic Awakened. I think even in China, I was reading some reports that some people felt the monetization was a bit heavy on it, which will obviously be interesting when that sort of IP comes to the West, whenever that happens in 2022. What people sort of think about that, but maybe the Western version gets a sort of different monetization strategy. I'm not quite sure on that, but
yeah, we'll see.
It does look amazing, doesn't it? I mean, it's absolutely the art style of that the Harry Potter game, it looks incredible. So interesting to see how that goes. Cool. I guess the only other thing we have to sort of talk about is sort of, in China, depending on how old you are, you're having sort of restrictions put around how long you can play and all that sort of stuff. Is that, are we seeing any sort of impact that in terms of sort of what games are released or anything? Or is that a bit too soon, I suppose?
Well, can say I haven't been monitoring the Chinese market that well. We don't have Chinese analysts here to tell that, but it definitely affects like what kind of games can be successful. Since like minors can't play during weekdays and even in weekends it can only be like a couple of hours per day, and I think IAP purchases also have also a limit of some kind, and you need to register with an ID, so it's actually monitored pretty well, so it's really hard for to be successful with a game that appeals mostly to minors or kind of late teens, 16 to 19. because they just can't play the game and ask for their parents to pay for their battle passes or other cosmetic purchases. So those kind of games, I'd imagine in China in long term, it's going to be more like older audience targeted games. But well, Harry Potter, I would imagine that would be appealing to a younger audience as well. But I suppose fans are more older now.
Yeah, I think actually one interesting game or case actually talking about Roblox. You know, it's one of the biggest games in the West, but it's actually released with its own ID in China. It has its own Chinese version, but it has not been like successful at all, pretty much, at least compared to the Western version. I think one of the big reasons for that is definitely the game time restrictions. As you know, Roblox, most of the players in the Roblox, they're quite young. And I would see the sort of the social different, you having different kind of game modes and like extremely social game. I would see that kind of game could really work in China without the restrictions. Yeah,
it is interesting. You sort of think if the restrictions stay in place, which you assume they will, developers have to think very carefully about that. And you know, and even if you know, if you were 16 in China and you basically only got to play for 3 hours a week, you'd be very, you know, you're very careful about what game you sort of chose, wouldn't you? If you only had like an hour a day to play, you'd really like you play. You know, you'd find the game you really wanted to. You know, that was really, really precious time, isn't it? So it will be interesting to see how that sort of mechanic, you know, that social mechanic, sort of feeds into. You know, you could. I'm sure game designers could come up with some very interesting sort of novel ways of sort of doing things, or you imagine sort of weird idle games where you have to play for a whole hour to try and lock them into your game, and then when they come back the next day, they get sort of like extra rewards or something. Anyway, I'm not a game designer, so I'll stop speculating on that sort of thing. Okay, good. So we've covered what's been going on in the key markets. Really, really fascinating. I think, you know, all these markets have some sort of obviously individual trends, individual games that have worked well, and then there are some of these sort of broader trends, which is sort of the same everywhere. So. Thank you very much for your expertise, Wilhelm and Timo.
Thank you.
And thank you to our listeners via podcast or watching the video version. So every few weeks we are talking to the people who are in the mobile game space, which is the biggest space in gaming and certainly the most dynamic and the most global. So hope you find this sort of stuff useful. Please give us some feedback by the usual methods if you would like to do that, and don't forget to subscribe, and thanks for listening and watching, and come back next time. See you soon.